Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Generation Y ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible, starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
There are days like today where I am just too busy to get outside and go feed myself. And that's where DoorDash comes in. It's super convenient, and they bring the food to me. Also, I don't like paying delivery fees, so I have DashPass. DashPass is an exclusive membership from DoorDash that gets you unlimited $0 delivery fees on eligible orders and members-only deals and discounts, all for only $9.99 a month. DashPass actually pays for itself in 2 orders on average. DashPass makes it easy to save at restaurants, grocery stores, and all your local favorites. Open the door to $0 delivery fees and savings you can't get anywhere else. Sign up for DashPass today only on DoorDash and get your first 30 days free if you're a new member. Subject to change, terms apply. Tonight, Aaron?
I'm doing fantastic, Justin. How are you?
I'm doing great. Tonight's case is something that very much interested both of us, and it kind of goes back to sort of the heart and bread and butter of our ideas when we first started this podcast. And it's a wrongful conviction case that happens to be rearing its ugly head as we speak. So what are we talking about tonight, Aaron?
Tonight we'll be discussing the case of the Dixmoor Five and the murder of Katresa Matthews.
And this was 1991, correct?
In the Chicago, Illinois area.
Yeah.
A case summary. Katresa Matthews is a 14-year-old girl, and every day after school she would stop at her grandmother's house and she would spend some time there, and then she would go on home. Well, one day she stops at her grandmother's house and then leaves there and is abducted, and she goes missing.
How many days does she go?
She disappears on November 19th, 1991, and she's found on December 8th, 1991. Investigators, detectives, will end up arresting 5 individuals who will later be known as the Dixmoor Five, and they will be tried for this crime. Only there are some real issues with the arrests, with the interrogation, with the trial. So we will get to that
later
tonight. Yeah. On this episode.
She's left her grandmother's house and she disappears, and they end up finding her body.
There's what they describe as a well-worn path running along I-57 as it passes through Dixmoor. And Dixmoor is a suburb of Chicago. It's to the south.
People refer to it as Chicago Town.
Chicagoland.
Chicagoland.
When she was discovered, she had no pants on, and she had been shot through the mouth with a .25 caliber gun. And they know this because there was a casing on her body. And then, of course, in autopsy, they were able to recover a .25 caliber bullet from her.
It also appears she was sexually assaulted, and they found her panties nearby. So investigators don't have much to go on at first. They just have this brutalized and murdered little girl.
Well, and often in these cases, they need to look for people that are connected to the victim somehow. Because as we know, many people who are murdered are killed by people they know. In this case, they seem to have some trouble with their investigation until October 20th, 1992. And that's when a police report indicates that Keno Barnes, who's 15 at the time, had informed the police that a young man named Jonathan Barr had told him he saw Katrisa getting into a car with Robert Taylor and Robert Veal. Barr, Veal, and Taylor were 14 years old at the time. So
who's driving?
That's my question, is who's driving? On the 29th of October, police will be, they bring in Veal to question him. He's questioned for more than 5 hours straight. His parents are not there. He doesn't have a lawyer present.
And how old is he?
He's 15.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting.
Now, he signs a handwritten statement that says that he and Jonathan Barr, Shane Sharp, Robert Taylor, and James Harden were involved in the rape and murder of Katrisa Matthews. So, handwritten statement signed. But of course, this is outside of any kind of assistance. He's on his own with the interrogators.
So who's next?
So they bring in Robert Taylor, who also signs a handwritten statement.
They interrogate him for hours too.
He doesn't have any kind of legal counsel. He doesn't have his parents around. He has, in other words, we've said it, and we say it almost every episode now, you're not really qualified. You need to have someone there that's looking out for your interests as well. It's great if you're trying to assist an investigation, but if you're there and you're young, naive, who knows what can happen? We've seen it. Some people, they close up and they don't say anything. Some people talk. Some people will do anything to get out of that room, even if they're going to be sent to prison for 50 years.
Help me help you, and you can go home tonight.
It's all about the few steps to get out of that room.
Yeah.
Imagine if you're claustrophobic and you're stuck in a closet. That's how I picture these interrogations going down, is the tension is mounting, the room is shrinking, and you feel like you can't breathe. You need to get out. And some of these guys just crack. Now, Robert Taylor implicates himself and the other four. On the 31st, which is a couple of days later, Shane Sharp is brought in. He's another member of the Dixmoor Five. 21 hours in police custody, he signs a handwritten statement implicating himself and the other four that I've named off in the crime. So we have three confessions now. And this should not be a shocker. These statements contradict each other, even in the basic facets of the case.
But they follow a general, very general storyline of they got together, they gang raped this girl and murdered her. Now, they might get the chronological order of who did what and all those things wrong, but all of them were there at this time, at this place, doing this thing. They actually get it more right than Jay does in the Adnan case. But they have a general consensus enough of putting all of them in one place at one time.
Right. And this is something that needs to be said, even if it's obvious to many of you. But if the police have several suspects who are all claiming to have taken part in a crime, this is just served on a platter at this point.
Yeah.
They don't need to cross too many T's or dot too many I's at this point, because people are taking responsibility for it, for the crime. So let's just move along here.
Yeah, you don't need all the DNA evidence. You don't need all the, you know, fingerprints or hard evidence. That it's just the power of the confession. And they have three of the five that have confessed.
Well, let's talk about DNA, because early on, they take swabs from the victim and they identify a single DNA profile. A single DNA profile.
Yep.
It's not mixed. There's one. And what that means is someone raped this girl.
One person.
And deposited semen into her body. You would think at this point that investigators would say, wait a minute. Could five people have really raped this girl and murdered her if we only have one
Oh, rapist. But come on, Aaron. They four of them were holding her down while one was doing it. So that just
explains. No, but they, you know, we have three people confessing that they took part in this.
Yeah. Well, that doesn't, details, man. Details. Come on. You can't get messed up in the details, right?
Prosecutors are not going to let this stop them from moving ahead and trying these five in court for the murder of Katrisa Matthews.
And there's one more thing about that profile that they found. They knew the blood type and whether it was a secretor or not. And according to some Innocent Project forms and websites, it did not match any of these five, but the prosecution didn't let that stop them either. They didn't have a DNA profile, meaning, you know, DNA testing to prove that it wasn't them, but they had enough information that the semen they found probably wasn't from these five, but they couldn't say absolutely wasn't. They were just pretty sure it wasn't based on blood types and other things.
Well, why slow the wheels of justice?
No, I don't know, man. He confessed, so it doesn't matter.
And this is something you and I talked about, is the power of the confession. It's so juicy to these prosecutors that there's really no reason to doubt anything once you have these confessions in place, because now you can show it to the jury and say, see, he signed this. This is a handwritten statement. They didn't say who wrote it,
yeah,
but they say that's his signature at the bottom. He read this and he signed it.
In the power of the signature, it's a contract. It's you say this is what I did. So, and really, if you're a juror in this trial, you have three confessions. How could you get three confessions from five guys? It's unlikely. They all give very pertinent details to the crime scene in their confession. They all put themselves there. So I get it. That's what you're serving to the jury. What's the jury supposed to do with that? They're going to do with it what most juries are going to do with it. They're going to find you guilty.
Since they had three confessions, they moved ahead to try and get some of these young men to turn on the others. They were able to secure testimony from Shane Sharp and Robert Veal against the other three.
And actually testify against them.
They testified against them in court. This trial does not go well for the five. Well, I should say for three of them, because two of them obviously did well for themselves by testifying in court. But let's run through the names again. So we have Jonathan Barr and James Harden. They're brothers, by the way. And James Harden does have a connection to the victim because he dated her about a year prior. Or as near as I can tell, they did date in the past at some point.
But this is 13, 14-year-old dating. So it's, you know, it's kind of middle school-y sort of stuff.
Right. Jonathan Barr is 14. James Harden is 16. So James Harden is about 2 years the senior of Katrisa Matthews. Jonathan Barr was sentenced to 85 years in prison. And James Harden was sentenced to 120 years. James Harden never confessed to anything. Never said he was there. He denied it. And
he got the worst of it.
He was given the highest sentence, probably because he denied everything. Robert Taylor, who confessed but did not testify, was given 80 years. Say Robert Taylor was 14 at the time. Robert Veal was also 14. He was given 20 years. Now, he testified. Beyond this, though, people who have looked at this case said that there's a big red flag on this, and that's that Robert Veal had an IQ rating of 56, which is pretty low.
Yeah, that's how you get a confession. That's how you get him to work for you, because he doesn't know. He doesn't understand what's going on. It's pretty easy to get a reduced sentence or a plea bargain or whatever out of somebody like that. Or just get a confession out of them and give them the full sentence if you can't get them to work with you.
He's got such a low IQ that you would think, well, he probably has difficulty putting things together.
Yeah.
Shane Sharp was 16 at the time. He testified. He was given a sentence of 20 years as well. We have a trial that ends with the convictions of five individuals. Many of these guys were in school with Katrisa. at Rosa Parks Middle School. They were aware of who she was. As I said, Harden had dated her in the past. So we have a connection there. We have confessions from three, testimony from two in court. How could this go wrong, right? I mean, this looks like a neat and tidy case at this point.
I understand why a jury found them guilty. I absolutely do. Because they're handed this.
You're watching, if you're a juror, you're watching the trial from in the courtroom. This isn't some Dateline episode that took place 3 years later that has testimony from people that knew the convicted or knew the victim or could take you through all of the evidence. This is as it went down in the court. They have confessions. They have testimony. This looks pretty good for the prosecutors.
And any exculpatory evidence was not exactly presented to the defense. They didn't really play ball the way they should have with their defense teams because they had confessions. So, well, they don't need to see this DNA profile. They don't need to go digging around in some of the actual physical evidence here.
I want to take a moment to talk about Katresa Matthews because, as we said, she was abducted, she was raped and murdered, and she left behind family, but I would like to talk about her mother. She has a mother named Teresa Matthews. Teresa Matthews has spoken about her daughter and said that Katresa was very good at math. She wanted to become an accountant after school, and she really loved swimming. Had dreamed of having a house someday that had a pool in the backyard. One of the stories that she recounted was that Katresa was concerned about her mother, didn't want her to be alone, and would tell her, "You need to get out and meet somebody. You need a man." Her mother replied that she had her, that she had Katresa. She goes, "I don't need anybody else. I have you." And since her daughter's death, she has moments where if she suddenly is laughing at something or enjoying herself at some point, she feels the pangs of guilt because her daughter can't enjoy life. Why should she be enjoying life? And she said that remembering how her daughter would hound her about, "You need to get out, meet somebody.
You need to go enjoy life."
Her daughter wants nothing more than her mom to be happy. And if she could speak to her mother today, her mother said, "I'm sure she would want me to be happy." So she thinks about her daughter hounding her about this and meeting a guy. And, you know, and she thought, "I have you. I don't need a man." But she understands that she does need to be happy.
And for a 14-year-old to come up with that, to tell their own mother, is pretty intelligent.
I think it shows the love she had for her mother. Yeah. She wanted her to... let's put it this way. So often in life, we see where people have divorce or other difficult situations and a parent will jump right back into another relationship. And, you know, I'm not going to be judging any of this. I'm just saying sometimes kids have a difficult time because they're suddenly thrust into a household with other people they don't know. And her mother really didn't seem to put her in that situation. No. So she kept the focus on her daughter. And even with that, her daughter was saying, "No, I want you to be happy." Mm-hmm. So it shows the strength of the relationship. And so when you hear that her mother is showing up to court, she's doing an interview here, there with a paper or a local TV station in the area, she's doing it to be her daughter's voice. And that's amazing because, you know, you could just shut down after losing somebody, but her mother has been very strong for her this entire time.
And just imagine if you're a parent there, you have these five guys, three of them have confessed. Your hatred, your disappointment, your loss is focused on them. And you're like, "I want justice and I want these guys to be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law." They confess to it. What more do we need to know?
You know? And as we know, these parents that lose their children, this justice that they're seeking will hopefully help them have some sort of closure. Like, "I've taken this as far as I can. Now I can come to peace with what's happened." Yeah. Because the system has worked.
Yep.
But in this case, as we said, they recovered DNA. They only analyzed it enough to get some basic information, you know, seemed to exclude these five. But as we said, the wheels of justice kept turning. This is going to come back to bite them, because in 2009, there would be pressure from some of these convicted to have the DNA tested.
Hardin, and later joined by Taylor and Barr. And for more than a year, the police department claimed that they were unable to locate the DNA. And it wasn't until they were threatened with contempt of court by the judge for failing to respond to a court-issued subpoena that they went and found this DNA. Now,
you say went and found like they had to look for it.
Well, I'm surprised they didn't destroy it, to be honest with you. I'm surprised they didn't throw it out.
I think that says that they're not completely heartless. But really, when it comes down to it, it's obvious that they didn't want to produce this evidence because they had already closed the case. Right?
Not only have they already closed the case, but they knew that the evidence would have more questions than answers when they produced it.
Or to take it a step further, would probably blow up in their faces.
And the system needs to run, and you can't have it stopping to error correct.
Or to reassess, yeah. Right? They can't do that. And we've had people write into us. We have listeners who are attorneys, and we have listeners who are prosecutors, and they've written into us and said, we don't do this. We don't ignore this kind of information. And I believe them.
Most prosecutors, they want to get it right.
They write in very passionately and they defend themselves, but you can't defend everybody. Just as every cop can't defend every other cop, Not every prosecutor can defend every other prosecutor, because some prosecutors, some investigators are not doing the right thing. And this is where we're headed with this case.
Yeah. And not that I feel like I need to give the disclaimer, but not all prosecutors are this way. All you guys that write into us are awesome and passionate, but we do need to criticize a few that don't do their jobs.
What happens in this case is just, it goes beyond the pale.
We'll get to that. We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly, or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. And immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails, feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out. They were able to get it down to the single profile, like you said, and they enter it into CODIS, which is the Combined DNA Indexing System and Database, that they can match it to offenders that are in the system. And they find a match. It doesn't match any of the 5. It matches somebody else completely.
a certain somebody that happens to be a hardened criminal, a sexual offender, has served time in prison. He's 33 years old at the time of the rape and murder.
He lived very close to Catrice's grandmother.
His name is William Randolph.
He goes by Willie Randolph, and he has a long criminal history. He had a total of 39 arrests. His first arrest was in 1977 when he pled guilty to rape. So his first arrest was for rape.
This isn't TV, as we know. Just because you file for an appeal, just because DNA evidence proves that somebody else was involved.
Who wasn't even connected to you.
Yeah.
Because he had no connection with the other five.
Yeah, a 33-year-old man is hanging out with 14 and 15-year-olds. Okay. But just because physical evidence completely obliterates the prosecutor's theory on the case and shows that somebody else more than likely perpetrated the crime, that doesn't mean anything for the accused. The day they find out, it only means years and years of appeals to get this evidence admissible, to get this evidence used for their release. So if you think, wow, okay, they found this and everything's great, a sigh of relief, that's not how it works. It's years.
Just because they have this epiphany or they have this new information that comes in that says, oh, wait, it was this other guy and he had no connection to the other people, so we should just let them go. It doesn't work that way. What happens is there's a long process that can take place. And so it could be months, it could be years before everyone gets let out.
So the defense teams argue that, hey, we have DNA that proves that our clients were not involved. It does not match our clients and it matches somebody else. Therefore, we have new evidence that will help exonerate our clients. What does the prosecutor say to this?
Well, the prosecutor is coming up with excuses because, well, they're not very happy with where this case is going. They already had secured the convictions of five. And now with this DNA evidence showing that Willie Randolph was the perpetrator of the crime, they're trying to explain it away.
Well, but first they say it's not new evidence, correct?
It's not new evidence because they had collected it early on. But here's the thing is, so it didn't match the five. But they're trying to have it both ways. They're trying to say, well, it's not new evidence, but we didn't exactly use it to work our case either. So but, I don't know what they're trying to say.
Well, they're trying to get off on a technicality of it's not new evidence. It was collected at the time. And therefore, we're going to argue that it's not admissible because it's not new, even though it completely obliterates their theory, everything that has to do with this case.
Right. This is where you can see there's a state's attorney. It's Anita Alvarez. She's the prosecutor. She uses this theory that was put forth, I believe, by the assistant attorney, which is, oh, well, Willie Randolph must have happened upon the body and raped the body.
Performed necrophilia.
Necrophilia explains away why his semen was found in the victim. I'm sure everyone is cringing right now, and that's what we're doing. No matter how many times Justin and I have talked about this, because we've talked about this case a lot, this just makes us cringe internally. How can anybody suggest that a person who has such a long criminal history involving rape, violence, robbery, drugs, just stumbles upon a body and performs necrophilia on it? It just doesn't make any sense.
Well, hold on. Let's flip it around. Let's say that this happened today and a 14-year-old girl was abducted and then found later raped and murdered. And the DNA profile that they took at the time exactly matched a known sex offender. Would they go find other people? Because the theory is, well, this guy could have just happened upon the body and performed necrophilia. We still need to find the perpetrators of the crime. Is that really the logic when you find a current victim? Is you assume that somebody tampered with the body afterwards and deposited their semen on it? Because that's literally what Anita has just said. that has that sort of disassociation completely from an actual crime scene, then you don't need to be doing the job you're doing. Because if you truly believe that any victim laying on the ground could be happened upon and tampered with by somebody else, and you're going to go with somebody else, not the DNA profile, then you need another job. There's no other way around it. I'm not going to sugarcoat that, because that's illogical nonsense.
Well, I don't think she has to make anybody happy. She doesn't have to satisfy anybody. All she has to do is do her job the way she sees fit and get paid for it. Right? Because that's what she's doing here. She's making excuses. And she is trying to use technicalities to cover her own ass.
But the whole point of it is to get it right.
Not for her, obviously.
Yeah.
She has quite a history of doing very illogical things and making crazy decisions in these different cases.
Yeah. So if you just think, well, this was just one bad case where she pulled some funny business and therefore, you know, we can kind of give her a pass because she's fighting the good fight and putting bad people behind bars. There's accountability here, but just maybe not on this case. No, no, there's a record of zero accountability. A current case was the Laquan McDonald shooting, the officer shooting in Chicago. They shot Mr. McDonald, who happened to be walking down the middle of the street holding a knife. You can argue all day long whether you felt that the shooting was justified or not. But the problem is all of the cops involved with that case made statements saying that McDonald had lunged at a police officer bearing his knife down on him when the shooting happened. Therefore, he feared for his life and needed to defend himself. When you see the dash cam footage, that didn't happen. He is merely walking down the road with a knife in his hand. Whether or not the shooting was justified, I don't even care anymore. But when you lie and falsify police statements, that's a problem. Anita had watched the dash cam footage weeks after the shooting, but did nothing, sat on it until over a year later.
Yeah, the dash cam footage was going to see the light of day.
Yeah.
It was going to be pushed out in front of the public. Knowing that, she decided to act and charge the officer in the case.
And she actually charges the officer that did the shooting with murder. So, according to her, it wasn't justified. Now, again, I don't even want to get into the argument of whether it was justified or not, but she sat on it. Just like she sat on this other case with these five men sitting behind bars. Justice delayed is justice denied. What about Catrice's mother? Is she getting the justice she deserves?
Again, you know, I've made the statement in the past that some of these prosecutors are just putting notches on a belt. They're just scoring points. And this is a clear example of that. There are prosecutors that do this, and this is so egregious. She has this case with the McDonald shooting where, yeah, she charges the officer, but it's because she knows the dash cam footage is going to come out and the public will see it. But as you said, and I think you're pointing out, is that there are all these officers that made statements, and their statements are lies. They know this because you can watch the footage and you can see that what they're saying did not happen. Mm-hmm. So shouldn't they all be charged?
Yeah.
That's a crime. They're falsifying reports.
And she claims that she doesn't want to put the cart up, you know, in front of the horse. She wants to make sure everything's good before she charges these people. But the public is waiting for justice and they're getting pissed. So whether it be the shooting or whether it be the Dixmoor 5, when you sit on it, when you make up excuses, oh, this other guy whose DNA was on the victim, he must have just stumbled across the body and performed necrophilia. Like, really?
The DNA evidence is tested, as we said. And so Judge Simmons had to vacate the convictions of Robert Taylor James Harden, and Jonathan Barr on November 3rd, 2011. And then the state's attorney's office dismissed all charges against all five men. So Taylor, Harden, and Barr, they're let free. Veal had already served his sentence and moved. Shane Sharp had served his time, but had been given additional time because of some drug charges. So he was released in 2012.
The one guy was already out. The second guy, he was released later. But those two guys had reduced sentences because of a plea bargain, because they testified against the other three. So apparently plea bargains only help the guilty and screw the innocent.
Well, I had read off the sentences that they were given. Jonathan Barr served 14 years. James Harden served 16 years. Robert Taylor, 14. Robert Veal served 16. And Shane Sharp served 18 years. You can see how they all spent a good amount of time in prison. Further down the road, they would have to be paid. They would be paid $40 million for their wrongful convictions.
Yeah.
So this is a serious thing, this money that's paid out, because Anita Alvarez all along the way is making excuses and trying to cover for her terrible decisions in this case. And yet they're forced to pay these men $40 million. And they're men when they get out.
Well, and the reason why is because she can't admit that she was wrong. The system cannot error correct. It will cause a ripple in the belief in our system if you actually admit you're wrong. You can't do that. You can't go back. You know, the public will understand that, you know, we just have to continue forward. But yet the public is getting more and more outraged every time the system does not show any accountability here.
So we talked about Willie Randolph, and just before the murder of Catrice, he had gotten out of prison after serving 20 years for armed robbery. Just this week, as you said, and this at this time, it's early September 2016, he's finally charged in the Catrice Matthews case.
Did they charge him with necrophilia?
Well,
again, but because that's what Anita said that he did.
No, and Anita's coming forward now and admitting in a way that she was wrong, because she's now apologized. After he was charged, she's apologized for what happened to these men. Let's just put it this way. It doesn't come across as genuine to me, because all along the way she's made excuses. And as you said, she didn't charge him with necrophilia, because that's laughable. It's not what happened.
But that's what her statement was. But
that was when she was still covering for her own ass.
I'm just calling her out on it. That's all.
Right. It's come back to haunt her. She said that the system didn't protect them, the Dixmoor Five, and victimized them in a way that can never possibly be repaired.
Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/GenY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GenY.
Now, think about that. The system didn't do this.
Like,
the system victimized them. She is the system in Chicago. She victimized these men. She had DNA profile that showed that they were not likely to be the perpetrators of this crime. Remember, they were treating this crime as a gang rape and a murder of a young girl. And yet they only had one DNA profile. This should have warranted further investigation. I'm going to tell you something else before I move on with her statements. Willie Randolph called in after the murder within days and reported seeing a body in a field. Yes. They never followed up with that call. They never went and searched. But when her body was discovered, she was discovered basically where he said she was.
So the perpetrator of the rape and murder calls in and reports the body. They do not follow up with him. They do not search for the body. It is discovered later.
Right. And this is a source within the police department admits that Willie Randolph had made the call. Hmm. Here's Anita Alvarez. This is September 1st, 2016, stating that the system has victimized these young men, but it's really her that's done it.
And the police investigators, too.
She went on to say that reforms have been implemented to ensure that no person is wrongly convicted again. Justin and I feared that with this episode, we would go on a rant for an hour. Because this woman, if you look up the number of cases and the way in the ways in which she screws these cases up, she's creating victims herself.
She's hard on crime, and that gets you reelected. People love it when you're hard on crime, and they don't want to hear you error correct. They don't want to hear that, oh, you didn't get it right. That doesn't matter. They just want to know that the bad guys are going to jail.
Out there.
We just mentioned two.
Right. There's an article out there that runs through a lot of the cases and details exactly why this person should not be a state's attorney. If you go by just some of the cases that we've read about, this is a nightmare. Just as Kim Fox said, there needs to be accountability. There needs to be accountability in that office. This, to me, seems like a huge mess. You're having to pay $40 million. You're having to issue these innocence certificates that say these men were not involved in the murder or rape of Katrisa Matthews. They had evidence that should have clued them in that at the very least, they shouldn't have gone down the road they did, but they went anyway because confessions trump everything else.
Yeah. So the taxpayers had to pay for her salary, the salary of all the people involved. They had to pay for these five men to be incarcerated for as long as they were. They had to pay for DNA testing. They had to pay for all this other stuff. And now the taxpayers will have to pay $40 million.
We've seen cabinet members, you know, at the White House lose their positions over less.
Yeah.
And yet these prosecutors that ignore physical evidence, where's the accountability? There's nothing holding them to be better prosecutors, to be truthful.
I think it was the Supreme Court case, Herrera versus Collins, that actually says that you can sentence a person to death and execute them. And as long as the process was followed, you crossed your T's and dotted your I's, and even if that turns out that that man or woman was actually innocent, the prosecution, the system is not held accountable. As long as they followed policy and procedure correctly, it is okay. And I think that's very telling of the world we live in with our legal system.
So Willie Randolph has now been charged. Katrisa's mother was there for the hearing, and she plans to be there every step of the way because justice has been denied to her. She thought, like you said early on, she thought they had the five. Everything was working. They had confessions. They had testimony. Everything looked good. And then she found out that they had lied to her. This is very hard on her because she lost her daughter, who she was very close with, and then now she's finding the system is broken. Now she's having to put her faith back into it again because now they finally have the man who left his DNA with the victim and has a long history of criminal activity, including rape and violence. Now she can finally hope that she's headed towards some justice and some closure. But again, the system failed her. It failed the Dixmoor Five. It's failed the people of Illinois, you name it. It looks like things are finally going in the right direction, but it costs these young men a good portion of their lives. I mean, that's a crucial time. That's where you're going to school. That's where you're getting your career started. That's where you're getting married. You're having children. They missed out on all of that. So they're late to the game. They've been denied life for some of them. You know, it's 10 to 20 years.
There's been other, at least on the federal level, cases where you cannot sentence a minor to life in prison. 80 to 120 years, that's a life sentence.
You would hope that they'd have more evidence. If they're going to put someone away for 120 years and they're only 16, they need more evidence than what they had.
Yeah, but see, it goes back to, you got to be hard on crime. And I don't care if they're 14 or if they're 16 years old. If they can do the crime, they can do the time. You know, that's how people feel about it.
Well, before we finish, I'd like to say that, as I said, Jonathan Barr and James Harden, they're brothers. Their father worked tirelessly to try and help them, to try and get them free. And he would carry case files with him wherever he went. If he ran into someone who was part of the legal system or a lawyer, he would offer them documents. He would talk about his boys. He was their voice. Mm-hmm. He's the one that wrote into the Innocence Project and said, you need to do something. Sadly, he died in 2009, about 2 years before his sons were released. They've both talked about their dad, and they both talked about how they had such great respect for him because he was there. He never gave up the fight. He showed that if you believe in something, you need to fight for it. So Jonathan Barr went on to have a daughter in 2014, and he named her Maddie after his mother. An interesting note here, Maddie was born on his father's birthday. So he felt like, despite all that had happened, he was given this great gift.
I'm happy for them. I mean, I'm sure this is a new lease on life and a second chance. I can't say that I would be there like they are. I mean, a lot of these wrongful convictions and exonerations, like, I'm not as strong as most of these people.
Well, and we didn't really go into it, but these men had support from the Innocence Project. Some, like James Harden, was represented by the University of Chicago Law School Exoneration Project. There were people that worked day and night to make this happen. This wasn't just a simple DNA test. There were a lot of things happening at the time to get these men free and to show that they were not involved. We hope that justice works. And unfortunately, when it works 20 years later, I don't know if that means it worked, but perhaps it did. It's just, it's not satisfying.
It's a day late, a dollar short at this point.
Right, exactly. In March of 2016, Anita Alvarez was defeated in the Democratic primary by Kim Fox. She continues to maintain that she was a very good prosecutor, despite evidence to the contrary. Kim Fox said, "The work is just beginning and our struggles here are very real. The need to rebuild a broken criminal justice system here in Cook County is not work that should be taken lightly." Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.